This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. It's a place where listeners and podcasters come together. Find out more at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's, .com.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Cameron for the Old Time Radio Network. Here to invite you to join me as we travel back in time, back before TV was, to that golden age of radio. The mystery.
The shadow knows.
The western. The music. The comedy.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first base.
Who?
The guy playing
who
first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell
That's
me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
To the earliest days of broadcast.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience.
Now yours truly has teamed up with the founder of the Radio Nostalgia Network, Mr. Dennis Humphrey. And together, Dennis and I will be bringing you a multitude of old-time radio programs, and we'll be mixing these great selections with our combined years of research and experience. All this, of course, is brought to you by our terrific sponsor at Libsyn.com. That's Libsyn.com. So join us now as we tune in to the best old-time radio on the planet, the Old Time Radio Network, where the oldies are still young.
Man reach the peak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek. When we're out together, dancing cheek to cheek.
Now to our featured program.
All thanks for the memory.
Hi everybody, I'm Warren Hughes, and welcome to Thanks for the Memory. Here's Jack Armstrong from December 12th, 1940.
Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling adventures of Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Look, I'm no crystal gazer or anything of the kind, but there are some things in the future that are pretty easy to predict. For instance, let's say that you're going to have a big breakfast of champions tomorrow morning. Now, let's see what I can make of that. Well, in the first place, I'd say that you're going to eat about the finest tasting breakfast dish you ever discovered. That combination of Wheaties, milk or cream, and fruit is jam-packed with a kind of flavor that ought to make breakfast one of the high spots in your day. Now let's see what else there is for you in that complete breakfast of champions you're going to have tomorrow morning. I know you'll be getting a lot of good, solid nourishment. All of the well-known essential nourishment of 100% whole wheat. You'll be getting excellent proteins, vitamins A, B1, C, and G, important minerals, as well as an abundant supply of heat energy, the food fuel that helps you keep warm. So, there you are. A look into the future for every good Wheaties eater. But say, if you're not eating a breakfast of champions every morning, you're missing out on some extra good eating. You're missing out on that keen Wheaties flavor and all the important nourishment in Wheaties, milk, and fruit. Now, I don't want that to happen to a single one of Jack Armstrong's friends. Ask Mother right away, before you do another thing, to get you a couple of packages of Wheaties the very next time she shops. Then remind her that you'd like Wheaties, milk and fruit, a real breakfast of champions, every morning. And now, Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Blackbeard Flint has stolen an important short and luminous ring from Uncle Jim and has made his way to the foot of a Philippine mountain. He's trying to escape from Jack and Billy and the Philippine Michelle, who are in hot pursuit. Further up the mountain are the unscrupulous adventurers Dr. Chapatto and Lazaro, who are coming down to help Blackbeard. Uncle Jim and Betty are somewhere on the mountain, too, with a friendly tribe of Negritos, but no one knows just what they're doing. Right now, Blackbeard has disappeared along the old foot trail at the base of the mountain, and Jack, Billy, and Michelle are frantically looking for him. Listen.
Jump on crickets, Jack. Where can Blackbeard have disappeared to? We saw him take this trail just a few seconds ago.
He must be along this trail somewhere, Billy. There's a steep cliff on the right. We could see him if we were trying to get back up the cliff.
Yeah, and there's a swift stream on the left of the trail. I don't believe he tried to cross that stream, Jack.
No, sirree. It's too swollen by the rains.
Then he's somewhere between us and that place where the path turns. How about it, Michelle?
Maybe him in bushes.
If he's in the bushes, we'll find him quick enough. He can't move fast in the bushes, and he's too big to hide himself. If we keep on along this footpath, we're bound to find him.
We've got to find him quickly, Jack. We've got to get that chart and ring from him and get away before Chapatto and Lazaro arrive.
I'll say we do. I wonder where Chapatto and Lazaro are now. We saw them coming down the mountain just a moment ago.
Me hope they break necks.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Michelle, but it'd certainly help if they'd each break a leg or so. I wonder what Uncle Jim and Betty are doing now, Billy. They must know that Chapatto and Lazaro got away from the Negritos.
Gosh, how I wish Uncle Jim were here. He'd figure out where Blackbeard disappeared to.
Blackbeard not gone far. We find him.
Look, Billy, here's a footprint. And here's another one. Blackbeard isn't far ahead,
but maybe it's not his footprint.
Of course it's his footprint, Billy. It's fresh. And besides, it was made with shoes. None of the Igorotes or Negritos wear shoes. And I'll bet there's not another white man for 50 miles except our bunch. We're getting close to him.
We'd better go carefully, Jack. He may be hiding in one of these bushes and try to backtrack on us after we go by.
He may do more than that, Billy. He may have cut himself a stick and take a wallop at us.
Gee, there's a whole clump of bushes ahead. Maybe he's hiding in there.
He not there, Senor Billy.
But how can you tell, Michelle?
Me tell. Me know how bushes look. No one been in those bushes.
Michelle's a good woodsman, Billy. But just the same, we'll keep our eyes open as we go by.
No, they're pretty thick bushes, Jack, but I can't see a thing in them.
Michelle's right. There's no one in them. And besides, the footprints keep on going.
Me see where he go.
Where, Michelle? Where?
He go in here. See?
I see it, Billy. Right ahead. It's a sort of tunnel into the side of the mountain.
Jumping Jiminy, then he did disappear right into the mountain.
It looks like the entrance to a mine of some sort. Is that right, Michelle?
You're right, Senor Jack. That old gold mine.
A gold mine?
That's probably right, Billy. Uncle Jim said these mountains are full of abandoned gold mines. Don't get excited. There's no gold left in him now.
Then we've got him trapped, Jack. If he's in the mine, we've got him trapped.
I don't know about that, Billy. If the mine is just a short heading in the hillside, we've got him trapped. But if it's a big mine, there may be miles and miles of tunnels and branches and headings. It might take a couple of days to explore them all.
But it doesn't look like a big mine, Jack. Such a small entrance.
You can't tell the size of a bottle by the size of the stopper, Billy. Here we are. Let's take a look around before we go in.
Look. There's an old, rusty, narrow-gauge railroad track going in. Vines and bushes have grown up all around it. Well, I don't believe it's been used for years.
You're right, Senor Billy. They get gold at Baguio now. They not get gold up here for a long time.
This looks like a big mine to me, Billy. Look, there's the remains of an old dam across the stream. They must have had a large washing plant here at one time. I'll bet the Spaniards operated this mine before the Americans ever got to the Philippines.
But gee, Willikins, Jack, if it's a big mine, we'll never find Blackbeard in there.
Maybe we can, Billy. It's dark in there. Blackbeard never carried a flashlight with him in his whole life. So he'd be afraid to go in very far. He'd be afraid he'd get lost and not be able to find his way out.
Then maybe he's only a little ways in. Maybe he can see us now.
I'll bet my boots he's not very far in there.
Have you got your pocket flashlight with you, Jack?
I'll say I've got it. If it didn't get smashed up when we slid down the side of the mountain. Let's see if it's all right. Here it is.
It's all right. It's got a good light. Let's go in now and get that chart and ring from Blackbeard. Chapatto and Lazaro will be here soon.
You and I will go in first, Billy. Michelle, you follow us. You're our getaway man. If Blackbeard gets away from us, you nab him.
Me grab him. Me hold him tight.
Come on, Billy. Watch your step. Don't stumble over this rail.
Gosh, all the dishwalks, but it looks dark in here.
It is dark. Watch where you step, Billy.
Flash your light, Jack. Let's see what's here inside.
Not yet, Billy. We can still see a little. Stand still for a moment, and we'll see if we can hear anything.
somebody in there, Jack. I can hear him move.
Somebody there, all right. And it's got to be Blackbeard.
But he's eating back, Jack. We'll lose him.
He won't get very far. He'll be afraid to go back too far without a light. Come on.
Jim, but Jimmy, it is dark now.
Look, Billy, straight ahead. Do you see what I see?
I see it, Jack. It's a spot of green light. It's the ring. It's the luminous ring shining in the darkness.
That's what it is. Blackbeard put it on his finger for safekeeping.
Hey, now, I bet he has the jar in his pocket.
He won't have it there long. Miguel, are you still with us?
Be still here, Senor Jack.
Good. You see that spot of green light ahead of us?
Si, Senor. Me see.
Keep your eye on that. That's the luminous ring. It's on Blackbeard's finger.
Me watch.
Flash your light, Jack. Let's see what he's doing.
Okay, Billy. But watch out. He may try to rush us. Here's the light.
There he is. There's Blackbeard.
Who's there?
You know who's here, Blackbeard. It's Billy and I.
A rattle of my rat lines. I thought it might be you. But who's that third fellow with you? I saw three of you come in.
Wouldn't you like to know, Blackbeard?
Well, it ain't your Uncle Jim. You look too small for your Uncle Jim. And it ain't one of those there Negritos. It's too big for that. Who is he?
It is Michel, Senor Blackbeard Flint. Me come with Senor Jack and Senor Billy. Me come to help them.
Well, blow them a 40 gansel sky high. So you turned tail on us, did you, Michel? You deserted ship. You've gone over to the enemy. Wait till the chief hears of this.
Me not care. Me finish with Senor Zapato. Me finish with you. Me go with Senor Jack and Senor Billy and Captain Finnyfield.
Well, ram me on a reef, Michel. You took a fine time to mutiny. Rip my royals if you didn't. Well there, Jack, if you'll stop flashing that light in my eyes, I'll be mighty obliged.
I'll keep the light on you for a while, Blackbeard. And I'll thank you to hand over that chart and ring you stole from us.
Why, roll my gunnels under, Jack. You don't.
The ring's on your finger now, Blackbeard, so don't bother to tell us you haven't got it. And the chart's probably in your pocket. Are you going to hand them over, or do we have to take them from you?
And we can take them from you, Blackbeard. Don't fool yourself about that. There are three of us here.
You aren't going to go back on old shipmate, are you, Michelle?
Me not shipmate of you, Blackbeard. Me have Senor Jack and Senor Billy.
Hurry up and make up your mind, Blackbeard.
Well, now, Jack, it's this way. I won't deny that I got the ring with me.
I'm willing to go 50-50 with you and your Uncle Jim on the matter of finding that uranium. We're not going 50-50 with your gang, Blackbeard. Not now or any other time. I'll give you 3 seconds to hand him over.
I'll give him the old tackle if he doesn't come across, Jack. You jump on him at the same time.
He have to, Senor Jack.
Well, Blackbeard, what about it?
Well, now, Jack, it's this way.
Look out, Billy. I'm going to put the flashlight down here so we can see.
Look out, Jack. Blackbeard is looking for a stone or something.
Come on, Billy. We'll rush him before he finds one. Come on, Michelle.
Well, I can't. Now when I give the word jump back, jump back to the flashlight. Okay, now back. Give me that light, Billy, quick. I'll hold it in the flashlight. We can see him, but he can't see us. Turn it, Jack. The gunfire, Blackbeard, now, he's cutting up. I'll get you from stem to stern. I'll split you from top side to bottom side. And as for you, Michelle...
All right, Blackbeard, here we are. Why don't you come and try a little ripping?
Come on, Blackbeard. Just try to take us apart.
What are you waiting for?
Me think, Senor Blackbeard, not in much hurry to try.
Oh, I blast him himself. I'll start with you.
Me here, Senor Blackbeard. Why you not come, huh?
He won't come, Michelle. He's had enough. He's just like you said, a big bag of wind.
We better get out of here, Jack. Chapano and Lazaro may be here any minute. We better get going. Have you got the ring and the chart?
Yeah, they're in my pocket, Billy. But you're right, we better get going. I'll keep the light pointed back on Blackbeard as I go out. You and Michelle head for the daylight at the entrance of the mine.
Oh, we can see the daylight, all right. Hey, Jack!
What's the trouble, Billy?
There's somebody just coming into the mine.
Yeah?
Wait, there's two of them, though.
Who are they, Billy? Are they Chapano and Lazaro?
I can't see who they are, but there are two of them, and they're coming in. Hear them?
Are Chapano and Lazaro coming into the mine now? If they are, well, Jack and Billy are in a jam. But wait a minute. Maybe that's Uncle Jim with Betty. But if it is they, you can be sure that Chapano and Lazaro aren't far behind. It looks as though that old gold mine is going to be rocking with excitement soon, and you won't want to miss it. So be sure to listen in at the same time tomorrow to another thrilling episode of The Country of the Headhunters with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. How's that Wheaties Chance Stamp album of yours coming along? If it isn't just about complete, here's a little tip. In a few weeks, there'll be some brand new stamps printed on the back of the Wheaties package, and I want you to have your Chance Stamp album right up to date so you'll be ready for these new stamps. How's about getting some Wheaties and adding a couple of new pages to your Chance Stamp album tomorrow for sure?
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all...
This is Franklin McCormick saying goodbye until tomorrow for General Mills, makers of Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions, who have just presented another episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
So just buy Wheaties, the best breakfast food in the land. Wave the flag for Hudson High.
The next installment of the interview with Rainey Cox and David Siegel regarding the radio show Casey Crime Photographer and the book is actually called Flash Gun Casey. When did the radio show start? Did it start in 42 or did it start a little bit before then?
1943. And it went to 1950. Then it went off the air for a few years because they started a TV series, 1950 to 51, which unfortunately was not overly successful. The TV series initially began with Richard Carlisle and then was taken over by Darren McGavin. Darren McGavin played Casey on TV for most of the period. Later on, of course, he's known as the actor who played Kolchak, who also happened to be a photographer for a magazine or a newspaper. Then it came back on the air in 1954 and 55 with the same original cast, except instead of Herman Chittison, there was Teddy Wilson, also a jazz pianist.
Oh, famous jazz pianist, yeah. Was Anchor Hawking the only sponsor for the show?
No, Anchor Hawking was for a number of years it went on without a sponsor, and when it went on without a sponsor, it kept changing times and also titles. Anchor Hawking was the first sponsor. Tony Marvin was the announcer for Anchor Hawking. Then Tony Home Permanent took over, and Bill Cullen was the announcer for the program with Tony Home Permanent. And the last sponsor was Philip Morris, and Ken Roberts was the announcer for Philip Morris.
How many radio shows do survive in the series?
We think there are about 80 or 81 programs that survived. For a long time, there were fewer than that, but recently I was able to acquire four more programs that were done in the United States, but we were discovered in, of all places, Australia. And by the way, the log of the book identifies each program in terms of date, title, when known the person who wrote the script, and also which programs are available in collections.
Well, generally, people would remember the show. What day would have been on the air? And you want to talk about some of the major performers on here, like John Gibson and the others, and maybe a little bit of their background.
Well, John Gibson also played in a number of other programs, but the program before it became sponsored, it was on the air every day. It changed times as a matter change times. As a matter of fact, we have a little spot in the book, if I can find it. From 1943, it was on Wednesday nights at 11:30. Later on, it was on Thursday nights at 11:30. Then Saturday nights at 11:30. Then Saturdays at 5. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Wednesdays again at a different time. Saturday in 1945. Tuesdays, Mondays, I think there were 10 or 12 different time periods. And the fact that it did so well in terms of ratings with all of those changes in time suggested at least that at the time that it was broadcast from 43 to 50, the fans of Casey must have been pretty loyal to continue to follow it regardless of the time changes. The only day it wasn't on was Sunday.
And you would think it might have been on a Sunday, considering the detective shows were sort of a popular staple of network radio on Sundays.
Well, one would have thought so, but I guess Sunday was the day that people reserved for perhaps more serious broadcasting.
The Shadow or Nick Carter or whatever those
yes,
days.
For the, yes, Sunday afternoon was pretty much a block that of that sort. True Detective Mysteries, Nick Carter Master Detective, The Shadow, et cetera, et cetera, that you could count on. And I guess there was no room for a mere crime photographer to muscle in on those days. But Dave is right. You know, it appeared on every weekday and a couple of times, three times on Saturday periods there. And there is a check of the schedule changes, as Dave mentioned, on page 84 of the book, which gives the time period and the day of the week and then the time. And it looks like, you might have had to be pretty loyal in order to follow it all the way through.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, some of the nights Dave was freaking off, who they might have gone head-to-head against over NBC. Could have been Your Hip Parade or whatever on Saturday. Or
possible.
Yeah, it could have been very, very tough.
You also changed the titles. In July,
yes, that's a very interesting story in itself, because in the original pulp stories, this is the only place we ever get a first name for Casey, and that is Jack Casey. And once in a while, I think a woman in the stories refers to him as John. Perhaps she knows him well, but he was nicknamed either Flash Gun Casey or Flash Casey because of the kind of flash camera that he used. And this was in the early days when they used flash powder, because at the time when the flash bulb was just coming into being. And so that was how he was known on the in the pulps. But when he got onto radio, he became... Well, maybe Dave can reel off the sequence here, but it was the original title was Flash Gun Casey, Press Photographer.
In 1943, the program started off as Flash Gun Casey, Press Photographer. In February of 44, the program started with Casey, Press Photographer, leaving out the Flash Gun. In 1947, it was Crime Photographer without any of the others. Let me go on here. In 1949, it was Crime Photographer again with Anchor Hocking. I'm sorry, with Tony. 1949 again, Philip Morris, Crime Photographer. 1954, First on the Scene, Crime Photographer. Continues to change, but the introductions change as the sponsors change, and also as the time changes.
Did George own the character even during the radio days, or was it sold off to CBS?
Oh, no, definitely he owned the character. Any deviation from the, use of the character in other media always could be, you know, was identified as a copyrighted character based on the stories of George Harmon Cox. And there is one very interesting example of that. which is mentioned in the book, a kind of, well, CBS wanted to do, I think they wanted to do a series of books, tie-ins, based on the radio show. And they started what they called the Crime Photographer series. And unfortunately, only one of those was ever published, called Dead Heat. George had nothing to do with the writing of it. But if you look on the copyright page, it's copyrighted both by CBS and by George Harmon Cox. So he still had, yes, he still had the rights to the character. And certainly when he revived the character in the 1960s for hardcover book publication, this was after the two novels that were serialized in Black Mask magazine, it was very obviously his character. And one interesting little thing about that is that in at least a couple of the books, there's a reference to this radio show which used Casey's name from the past and the ribbing that Casey got from his co-workers for being a hero on the radio. So they kind of, you know, George kept this idea up. After I think the last book or so that he did, he dropped any reference to the past like that. But the radio show was definitely a very important part of the whole series, or the whole story and history of Flash Gun Casey.
I think he makes reference in the interview that he did with Randy, the fact that at one point, that may have been when he was talking about the TV series, he comments on the fact that since he did the negotiations, his agent wasn't going to get a cut of that.
Yes.
I'm talking to David Siegel and Randy Cox about their new book, Flash Gun Casey. And once again, David, how can people get a copy of it?
www.bookhunterpress.com/radio is the website. People wanting to write to us can write to Book Hunter Press at P.O. Box 193, Yorktown Heights, New York, 10598. The price of the book is, Randy?
$18.95.
Plus $3.50 shipping. Amazon will send it to you if you order it through Amazon. Barnes & Noble has it on their website. Radio Spirits can sell it to you, and also, if you're interested, provide you with some, a 10-program CD set, all of Casey Crime Photographer that goes with it. And I understand that, what's the company that does that? Bud Plant is also carrying the book.
Yes.
People who are aware of that company.
Now here's a Cavalcade of America with Irene Dunn.
Cavalcade of America. Starring Irene Dunn in Citizen Mama. Presented by the DuPont Company, makers of better things for better living through chemistry. Good evening, this is Bill Hamilton. Tonight, the DuPont Cavalcade comes to you from the beautiful Kleinhans Music Hall in Buffalo, New York, where the 25th anniversary of the birth of DuPont Cellophane is being celebrated. On this cavalcade, we present one of Hollywood's brightest stars and one of America's most distinguished citizens, Irene Dunn. Miss Dunn will portray the character of Mama, which she made famous in the motion picture success, I Remember Mama. In our original radio play, Citizen Mama, daughter Katrin tells of further adventures of Mama and the Hansen family.
I remember San Francisco and the house where I was born. I remember the fogs rolling up the hills from the bay and the sound of boat whistles never stopping. I remember the girls I grew up with and all our neighbors there on Steiner Street. And I remember Niels, my big brother, and my little sister Dagmar, and of course, Papa. But most of all, when I think back on those days, most of all, I remember Mama.
Katrin, Dagmar, Papa, Nick, supper is on the table.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, yeah,
how
come.
How can you be, Dagmar, with all that bread and butter and sugar you just ate?
Well, I don't eat much, Nels. Do I, Papa?
Only one meal a day, all day long.
Yeah, well, it's good to watch people eat. Only sometimes I wish we could eat the dishes, too.
Guess who washes the dishes at Alice Jordan's house, Mama? Mr. Jordan.
Well, it's not the way I was brought up to run the house.
Oh, Alice says her mother says that's the way Americans do things.
I hate Mrs. Jordan, and I hate Alice Jordan. And, oh, especially I hate her snippy little brother, Tommy Jordan. I hate him.
Dagmar, it's not a nice way to talk.
I mean it, Mama. I hate Tommy.
But did he do something bad to you?
He keeps calling me a Scandahoovian, and I can't stand it.
Well, it's nothing to be ashamed of. Your parents come from Norway, Dagmar.
But Tommy told everybody I shouldn't be the Statue of Liberty, Mama.
Well, what has the Statue of Liberty got to do with things?
I'm it. Our teacher picked me. We're going to act out a wonderful play all about history. It's called Sam and Sandra Meet Their Uncle Sam.
And you're to act the statue, Pa?
I know it already, too, Mama. I am Liberty. I hold my torch high for the whole world to see.
Why doesn't Tommy want you to be the statue, Dagmar?
He's jealous because he's only the Louisiana Purchase.
Oh, well.
He told everybody in the playground practically I shouldn't be the Statue of Liberty because it's American and I was Scandahoovian.
Oh, well, now, you are not to my name, Dagmar. You are just as much American as Tommy Jordan, born here, same as him.
I told him so, too. Then Tommy said his father said that you and Papa aren't citizens. He said his father tried to get you to vote or something in some election or something. And you couldn't because you weren't citizens. Is that true, Mama?
Yeah, that is true, Dagmar.
Oh. Why aren't you a citizen, Papa?
Well, it's not important for grown-ups, Dagmar.
Tommy says the government won't let you.
Oh, no, it's not true, Dagmar. Only first Papa must take out what they call the second papers. Then Papa and I will be citizens just as much as Mr. and Mrs. Jordan.
When are you going to get this paper, Papa?
Oh, soon. Soon.
So you've been saying that since I was smaller than Dagmar, Papa.
Now, Nils, it's not up to you what Papa does. Papa has always been so busy making money for the family, he's had no time to get the citizenship papers.
Well, I wasn't criticizing.
I don't blame Papa. I wouldn't want to go to night school either.
You mean Papa would have to go to school to be a citizen?
Well, naturalization school, they call it.
School? Papa!
There's nothing funny about that, Dagmar.
Would Papa have to bring home a report card?
It is school for grown-ups, Dagmar. Everyone who comes from the old country almost goes there.
Oh, I wish you'd do it right away, Papa. Will you please? Please.
Well, all right, I do it. I do it soon, Dagmar.
Oh, do it now, Papa, please. I want to show that Tommy Jordan who's a Scandahoovian.
I remember when supper was over and the dishes were washed, Dagmar would feed her pets and Niels would go to his room and do his homework. I took piano lessons and had to practice every night. This was the only time of the day Mama would ever stop working. While I played, she and Papa would sit in the kitchen and drink coffee and just talk.
Oh, it's good the way Katrin plays that folk song now.
Yeah, yeah.
I love to play among the hills sweet with clover. Their larks are fine in their bogles gay, with jacket buttons silvered over.
I never forget time you sing that song at same time I'm asking your father if I can marry you. Remember, Martha?
Yeah, Lars. I was standing in the kitchen. I could hear every word you and Papa were saying.
Oh, yes, your father was saying, you mean. I was too afraid to say one word.
Oh, I still get nervous when I think of listening. That's why I start to sing that time, so I cannot hear what you and Papa say.
Oh, it's a good thing you did, Marta, or I would not have had courage to ask him yet. Oh, it's awful to be so shy as I am, Marta. I think I'm going to die right on the spot. Then I hear you and I think how much I love you, and somehow I find words.
Always I have been glad you did, Lars.
Sometimes I think I'm not good enough for you.
Oh, you are best man I know. And that's plenty good enough for old married woman like me.
Yes, but it's not good. I bring shame on the children. I should be American citizen, so?
Well, I like if you were, Lars. Children should not feel different from other children. It's bad.
Yeah, I know.
Couldn't you try the night school just once more? It would make the children very happy.
Oh, I would like it, Marta. And not just for Niels and Katrin and Dagmar. For you and me, too. America's fine country. I would like us to be citizens.
Lars, you already have first papers.
3 times already I have first papers.
Yeah, but the last ones have not run out yet. You have only to get your second papers and it's all over.
Oh, only?
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, won't you try? Just once more, Lars. Maybe you get teacher this time you feel at home with. Just once more, Lars. Try.
I don't know where I ever get a teacher I feel good with. But I try it once more if it make you happy.
Oh, it does, Lars.
Where is everybody? Is nobody home?
It's Uncle Chris.
Now,
say nothing of the night school to him, Marty. He's a big talker in Yorker, your uncle is. I never hear the end of it.
No, don't worry. I won't say a word.
Hello, Marta.
Hello, Uncle Chris.
Hello, Uncle.
Dagmar says you are going to be a schoolboy again. A little schoolboy, huh, Lars?
Uncle Chris is so funny.
Dagmar, it's time for bed. Go now.
I want to stay here with Uncle
No,
Chris.
No, go now. No, I say, Dagmar, go.
Here's something make you sleep better. Nickel.
Thanks, Uncle Chris.
Go now.
Mama.
Yes, what is it now?
Do you know what the Torch of Liberty is? It's the janitor's flashlight. Good night.
Good night. Now, Marta, you bring me and Lars drink, and we celebrate Lars is old enough to go to school.
Uncle Chris, it's not kind of you to make fun of Lars. He cannot help that he is shy with strangers any more than you can help that you have loud voice.
What is wrong to laugh at people when they're funny? For a grown man to be afraid to go to school is funny. Little Dagmar is not afraid her father is. That's funny, so I laugh.
School is wrong to even think of, Martha. I could never do it.
Of course you can,
Lars. No. We forget the whole thing. I go now and get drink for Uncle Chris.
Oh, now see what you did. No wonder they call you the Black Norwegian. You are a big bully, Uncle Chris.
I am not bully. I am head of family.
You were not nice to Lars.
It is better you I laugh at Lars than strangers laugh. At school, he used to make fool of himself.
We will see, Uncle Chris. We will see.
I remember when I came home from school the next afternoon, I could hardly believe my eyes. Mama was sitting down reading a book. She was always too busy for reading.
Oh, Katrin.
What are you reading, Mama?
Well, it's World Almanac Niels gets for Christmas.
Oh, that.
Where is Dagmar?
Oh, she came home with me. She's out in the backyard playing with some other little girls. Uh-oh. Sounds like Tommy is there, too. I wish those kids would leave Dagmar alone.
Katrin, I must go downtown for a little while. You look after Dagmar in the house.
Where are you going, Mama?
Well, I cannot tell you now, Katrin. Later, maybe.
I couldn't imagine where Mama was going. She was so mysterious about it.
Yes, lady?
You are Naturalization Bureau?
Yes.
My husband is named Lars Hansen. He is from Norway. He's a fine carpenter. He wishes to become American citizen.
Very well. The first thing your husband has to do, Mrs. Hansen, is to fill out a declaration of his intent to become a citizen.
Yes.
You may have heard that called the first paper.
But my husband has already taken out his first papers 3 times.
I see. Well, then before he can become a citizen, he must live in the United States for at least 5 years.
Oh, my husband has already lived here longer than that. 16 years.
Then at least 2 years must elapse between the time he files his declaration of intent and the time he can take his examination for citizenship.
Oh, it's over 2 years already since my husband took out his first paper. It's 2 years, 5 days.
In that case, he can be given an examination, and if he's approved, he becomes a citizen.
Yeah. Now, please, what is this examination like?
Well, it's very simple. The alien has to prove to the examiner that he can speak English.
Oh, my husband speaks fine English.
That he can write his name.
Oh, my husband writes fine hand.
And he has to show attachment to the principles of the Constitution.
Oh, my husband. Oh, yes, I see.
Yeah, well, they'll teach him everything he needs to know in naturalization school.
Well, may I ask a question for myself, please?
Ask anything you like, lady.
When my husband becomes citizen, I become citizen too, so...
Automatically.
And I do not have to go to school or take examination, so?
That's what I meant by automatic.
Where do I fill out the paper to become citizen?
You don't, lady. Your husband does.
But you do not understand. I wish to go to school, take examination, and become citizen first before my husband. Then he will become automatic citizen, so?
It ain't so, lady. It just ain't so.
But... if I become citizen when husband does, why cannot he become citizen when I do?
The law says you're what your husband is, not vice versa. That's the law.
Oh, but my husband wants to be citizen very much.
Then he'll have to take the examination like anybody else, himself, in person. Is that good and clear?
It's clear, yeah. It's not good.
While listening to Irene Dunn in Citizen Mama on the Cavalcade of America, presented by the DuPont Company, makers of better things for better living through chemistry.
Mama didn't tell us then about her visit to the Naturalization Bureau, and she didn't say any more about Papa becoming a citizen. But she began acting more and more mysteriously. 3 nights a week she went out by herself.
Oh, that folk song is fine peace-catching. It makes me think of Norway.
Is Norway beautiful, Papa?
Yeah, if you like mountains.
Is Mama home yet?
Dagmar, you ought to be in bed.
Mama said I could stay up till she got home.
Oh, here's Mama now.
Hello.
Oh, it's not Mama. It's Aunt Jenny. Hello, Aunt Jenny.
Hello, Aunt Jenny.
Hello, girls. Hello, Hansel.
Hello, Jenny.
I stopped by to get Martha's recipe for angel cake. Hers uses one less egg than mine.
Oh, she's not home yet, Jenny.
Oh? What is Martha doing out at night?
She's at Aunt Trina's.
Trina's?
Yeah, 3 nights a week she goes now and helps Trina sew clothes for the new baby come.
Martha is not at Trina's. I was just there.
And Mama's not there?
No, nor has Trina seen her for 2 whole weeks, she said.
She was there night before last.
That is what Martha says.
Where else would she be?
If my husband was alive and I went out 3 nights a week, my husband would certainly ask me where I went.
Why would she say Trina's if she was going some other place?
All I know, she is not at Trina's. I was there.
Hello? Is Nils home from the Boy Scout yet?
Oh, Jenny.
Hello, Mama.
Well, Does no one else say hello?
Where have you been, Martha?
Jenny was at Trina's. Said you were not there.
And where did you say I was, Jenny?
I said I was at Trina's and you was not there. That's all.
In other words, I tell lie.
I said no such thing.
Well, I did tell lie.
Martha.
So?
I have not been at Trina's tonight or any night lately.
Well, ask her where she has been, Lars.
I will not, Jenny. It's Martha's own business where she goes.
Well, don't you want to know, Lars?
If you want to tell.
I've been to school.
School?
School, Mama?
I told Fib so you would not laugh at me like you did Papa.
But why'd you go, Mama?
So Papa would not have to. They teach me to be the citizen, and I teach it all to Papa. It's good, Papa.
Every evening for the next few weeks, Mama taught Papa the things she had learned in the naturalization class at the night school.
Now, Lars, what three branches is the United States government divided into?
The executive.
Good.
The legislative.
Good.
And the...
You?
Judicial.
It's very good, Papa.
We were all so very helpful. But as I look back on those days, I wonder if Papa didn't secretly regret that he hadn't gone to the night school. But he studied very hard, and the whole family was proud of the progress he made.
I bet you get 100 when you take your examination, Papa.
Don't get so excited you forget to eat your supper, Dagmar.
Oh, fat chance.
You know what I told Tommy, Papa? I told him that I bet you knew just as much about the government as the president, practically.
Maybe only as much as Vice President Dagmar.
When do you have to see the examiner, Papa?
Well, last week, Mama helped me fill out the paper, and we sent it in, Katrine. Then they write the letter when they want.
Oh, do you think it'll be soon, Papa?
Oh, it's most likely, yeah.
Gee, I get scared just thinking about it.
What's there to be scared of? It can't be so hard to be a citizen. Look at them all.
Papa knows every question that the examiner might ask him. You will see.
Oh, if only I can say what I know.
Oh, you will, Papa.
Sure you will.
Here's the doorbell.
Hark it.
I'll go.
Now, notice the dam, Dagmar. Nils will go.
Yes, Mama.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if it was a lawyer telling us we'd been left a fortune by a long-lost uncle?
Yeah, he's more likely to be the paper boy wanting his money for last week.
Who is it, Nils?
A letter for Papa. It's from the Naturalization Bureau. Here, Papa.
Oh.
Thank you, Niels.
What's it say, Papa?
Well, yeah. Just a minute.
Give him time to get it open, can't you?
Yeah. I'm all thumbs, Martha.
Yeah. Well, Lars?
On 25 of this month.
Yeah.
I'm to go to Naturalization Bureau and see examiner.
The 25th is only 3 days off.
Ah, it's good. Sooner is the better.
Oh, but golly.
Come on now, girls. It's time to clear the table.
All right, Mama. Papa's going fast.
Yeah, Dagmar. Come, Catherine.
Oh, yes, Mama. You'd think they'd give more than 3 days notice.
Papa?
Yes, Nils?
There's a thing the fellas at high school do sometimes when they're scared about an exam.
Well?
They write the answers on their cuff.
Do you do that, Nils?
Oh, no, Papa. That would be cheating.
If you don't do it, Nils, I don't do it either.
I just wanted to help, Papa.
You are a good boy, Nils.
I'll always, always remember the day that Papa saw the examiner. We were all there with him. Papa wanted us to be. Uncle Chris and Mama's sister Jenny were there, too. They were character witnesses.
Why is Lars so pale? Is he maybe catching something?
Lars is catching cold feet.
Uncle Chris, please.
There's no need to be afraid, Mart. I fix everything for Lars.
Lars Hansen. Is Lars Hansen here?
Yeah, here. He's right here.
Come forward with your witness, please.
Go on, Lars. Go on.
Go ahead.
Which of you is applying for citizenship?
My nephew-in-law here. I am witness for him.
I am also witness.
I am Christopher Halverson, 17-year citizen of this country. My nephew-in-law will make first-class citizen. Are you in it?
Well, yeah.
He will be one of best citizen. I swear oath on that. One of very best citizen. So you make him citizen now, huh?
I'll have to ask the applicant some questions before I can make any recommendation.
Questions? Well, what is use of questions? He'll make good citizen. I know him.
That alone is not sufficient, sir.
Why not? I am head of family.
I'll have to ask you to let me get on with the examination, sir.
But I am witness.
And when I need your information, I'll ask for it. Meanwhile, I think you'd better stand over there.
You do as the man says, Uncle Chris.
Yeah, it was not like this when I became citizen.
Now, you are Lars Hansen? Are you Lars Hansen, I said?
He is, yeah. I am Mrs. Hansen.
Let the applicant answer his own questions, please. One of the purposes of this examination is to find out how well he speaks English.
Oh, his English is fine.
No interruptions, please. Now, according to this application, you've been in this country 16 years. Is that correct, Mr. Hansen? Is it? Please answer aloud instead of nodding, Mr. Hansen. That's the only way I can tell anything about your English. Do you understand me? No, no, out loud. Say something. Anything. Tell me why you want to become a citizen, for instance. Why do you want to become a citizen, Mr. Hansen? Tell me.
Papa just stood there, trying to get up courage to speak. He looked more and more helpless and miserable, and the examiner's face took on a very doubtful expression. And then the strangest thing happened. Mama began to hum that little Norwegian folk song I play. Then Papa looked over at Mama, and he smiled. And then he turned back to the examiner.
I want to be the citizen because my wife wants it. My children want it. And I want it. The whole family want it. Very much.
That's a very good answer, Mr. Hansen.
Of course, there was more to the examination than that. Papa was good on some of it and bad on some of it. Just enough to leave us in suspense for a whole month. Then one day, Papa got word to come to the final hearing.
And now the oath of allegiance, Mr. Hansen.
Oh, one question, please.
Certainly.
When I become the citizen, my wife does too, so?
That is correct.
Then may my wife take oath of allegiance now at the same time with me?
She may. Read it, please.
Mother.
I
hereby declare
on oath that I
absolutely
and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign.
So Mama and Papa stood there hand in hand and said the oath, and I think we were almost as proud of them as they were of each other.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic,
that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. So help me God.
And that's how Mama and Papa became citizens. And what I remember most about the whole thing is Mama's last question to the judge.
Mr. Judge, to be the citizen, have I paper to sign or anything?
Not a thing, Mrs. Hansen. You women have it easy.
Mama just smiled.
Now, Bill Hamilton speaking for DuPont. This evening's Cavalcade broadcast has come to you from the city of Buffalo in New York State. Here in Buffalo, just 25 years ago, the DuPont Company built a plant which was to change the buying habits of a nation.
Its product, scarcely known then, was a tough, transparent film invented by a Swiss chemist who hoped to make a stain-proof tablecloth. The film was costly to make, but the DuPont Company was willing to risk capital for the plant. It was a chance, but the DuPont management believed the new chemical film might have far-reaching use. It might provide new standards of convenience and cleanliness. It might prove to be a better thing for better living through chemistry. The name of the product, as you have probably guessed, was and is DuPont Cellophane. The costs of manufacturing the first cellophane the DuPont Company produced in America were such that it had to sell at a price of $2.65 a pound. It was used in a limited way, mainly for wrapping candy boxes. But more and more capital was poured into the venture. In DuPont laboratories and in the plant itself, chemists, engineers, and other technologists were hard at work. The first great result of this team of investment and research was a cellophane film that was moisture-proof, that would not let moisture in or out. Keeping the film's transparency and flexibility, the technologists went on to improve it in other ways. They perfected films which could flow swiftly through wrapping machines, films which actually controlled the amount of moisture passing through them, films which could be sealed by the touch of a hot iron. Today, this Buffalo plant is one of four DuPont cellophane plants, employing, all told, nearly 5,000 highly skilled people. More than 50 different types of cellophane, developed by DuPont, are now in use in more than 5,000 different ways. And through the continuing effort of DuPont men and women in laboratory and plant, production has been made more efficient, output constantly increased. Today, on cellophane's 25th birthday, a much improved cellophane sells at an average price of 48 cents a pound, as compared with the original price of $2.65. Quite a number of men and women from the Buffalo plant are in our Cavalcade studio audience this evening. Together with the people in the other plants, they can justly feel that as part of this team effort, they have made an important contribution to the living standard of America. They have helped to create jobs for themselves and others. They have helped to bring success to hundreds of small businesses all over the country whose products gained wider acceptance through improved packaging. In 25 years, cellophane has established a record of real service to industry and to the public. Cellophane, the transparent film that shows what it protects and protects what it shows, is one of the DuPont Company's better things for better living through chemistry.
Tonight's Cavalcade play, Citizen Mama, was written by Frank Gabrielson. Music was composed by Arden Cornwell, conducted by Donald Bryan. This is Ted Pearson speaking.
Be sure to listen next week when Cavalcade presents a colorful and thrilling romance of the South, Dinner at Belmont, starring Janet Blair, Arthur Kennedy, and Marjorie Maud.
Cavalcade of America is directed by John Zoller and came to you tonight from Kleinhans Music Hall in Buffalo, New York, and is presented by the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Have a Cavalcade of America. I'm Warren Hughes, and may the good Lord Jesus Christ bless you. And this is Yesterday, USA.
Yesterday, USA. Superstation.
Welcome, everybody, to the tail end of tape number 7 for the 2-week period that began on the 22nd day of May. Bill Bragg coming your way and reminding you about our big live broadcast that happens every night, 7 nights a week, 10:30 p.m. until midnight. I'll be here live and in person Monday through Thursday with Mr. Mike Handy. That's a great time to get in touch with me personally. The telephone number is 972-889-TALK. That's 972-889-TALK. And if you call during those times, 10:30 p.m. until midnight, Monday through Thursday, then you're going to get me on the third ring. Now, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, it's Walden Hughes. There's always somebody live and in person. awaiting for you here on Yesterday USA. And speaking of live broadcast, there will be a grand live broadcast on the weekend of Friday and Saturday, June 23rd and June 24th. That's when we broadcast live the Rep Showcase Radio Extravaganza. It comes to you live from Seattle, Washington, with big-name old-time radio stars like Dick Van Patten, Alan Young, Dick Beals, and so much more. Stay tuned to Yesterday USA for more information, and be sure and listen to tonight's live broadcast, 10:30 p.m. until midnight. And why don't you visit the website, yesterdayusa.com, and on the bottom, click where it says, Donate Money Now, and do that, because we're dependent on you. We need your help so that we can keep on keeping on.